Hello, so thanks for the organizer for inviting me today to talk about plants. So I'm Maud Tenaillon, I'm working in the Quantitative Genetics and Evolution Department in the Plateau de Saclay. And I will talk to you about crosstalks between wild and domesticated in Zea, a genus that encompasses one of the most important crop worldwide, which is maize. So I'm interested in the study of domestication as a coevolution between humans and plants. And I'm defining domestication here as the process by which species acquire traits beneficial to humans. So everything starts with a wild population. So you can see here a wild population of teosantes, which are the ancestor of maize, and they are endemic to Mexico. So you see here population evolving under natural selection in their natural habitats. And some time ago, so around 9,000 years ago for maize, humans have domesticated these wild population and have transformed them into traditional land races that have been bred and spread outside their native range for millennia. With the rise of the modern agriculture, people have derived inbred lines from these traditional land races. So here is a field of inbred lines. And these inbred lines have been used to create hybrids that you can see pretty much growing everywhere in Europe. So these two last steps, domestication, breeding, and dispersal, have been, the plants are evolving here under both natural but also human selection. And domestication has been a major transition in human history. It facilitated the sedentarization and expansion of human population, as shown here, for instance, in the South American population, where you see that the Neolithic transition has led to a drastic shift in human density. Domestication was also accompanied by technological developments, the emergence of cities, labor division, and social stratification, with very strong consequences on landscapes, environments, and also the emergence of infectious diseases that are often linked to our close proximity to farm animals. During this domestication and breeding, crops have been incredibly successful. So these are just examples for four crops: maize, wheat, grape, and tomato. Here, the area of origin is depicted by these black rectangles, and in colors are all the countries where they are now cultivated. So you see that these species have originated and have their wild relatives usually encountered in very small geographical areas, but they have invaded pretty much every country worldwide. So they are extremely successful invaders. And there are a number of factors contributing to their success. So humans have created artificial, comfortable niches for these species by bringing water and nutrients. They suffer also from little competition due to the use of herbicides. They are generally in good health, owing to the use of pesticides. And what I'm more interested in here today is also by their adaptive capacity that I think has been boosted by admixture within crops, so between different varieties, but also between crops and their wild relatives and vice versa. So I'm going to be talking about maize. So maize domestication occurred in Mexico around 9,000 years ago. And there are two subspecies of annual teosantes in Mexico, the subspecies Parviglumis that grow in the western lowlands of Mexico, and the subspecies Mexicana, here in red, that grows in the highlands of Mexico. And it was established in 2002 that basically if you sample a bunch of maize, and the different colors here correspond to the different genetic groups of maize, so if you genotype a bunch of these maize, basically you find that these maize has a mono, they all have a monophyletic origin, and they are closer to the Parviglumis subspecies. So clearly, they have been domesticated from Parviglumis, and Mexicana is closely related, but it's not the direct ancestor of maize. So domestication have led to a number of transformations in the architecture of the plants and in the architecture of the ear. And so from the original center of domestication, there has been several expansion of males that have been described both northwards and also southwards. And so what I want to show you today is that basically admixture among wild populations have contributed to their local adaptation. This is also true for admixture among varieties, but also there has also been some admixture from the wild to the crop that have contributed to the adaptation of the crop. So starting with Theosanthes, as I told you, there are two subspecies of Theosanthes that are closely related to maize, Parviglumis, which is the direct ancestor of maize here in yellow, and Mexicana. So some years ago, we performed some niche modeling. We showed that Parviglumis occupies a green niche here, while Parviglumis occupied a green niche here, while Mexicana occupied a red niche. And these niches are quite separate and defined by distinct ecological requirements. So you have a picture here of Mexicana and Parviglumis. And so typically, the average altitude for Parviglumis is around 1,000 meters, and for Mexicana, it's about 2,000 meters in altitude. And so what we did is we went to Mexico and we sampled the two altitudinal gradients, the altitudinal gradient depicted here in white and the one depicted here in black. The two gradients encompassed both the subspecies Parviglumis in the lowlands, depicted here by circles, and the Mexicana subspecies, as shown by triangles here. We run a trimix analysis, and what we found is evidence from gene flow, even between populations that were very far apart, so two lowland populations, but also from highland to lowland population. And so we sequenced a bunch of these populations and several individuals per population, and we performed a genome scan. And here is the results that we found. And we found several instances of this using a method called HAPFLK. And so this is basically two highland populations from the two gradients, H1 and H2. And these are two lowland populations from the two gradients, L1 and L2. And what you can see here is that in the two highland populations, there is no signal of selection. So we modeled here ancestral haplotypes, and you see that they are equiprobable in the two highland populations. However, in the two lowland population, you have a raise in frequency of two haplotypes, and they are the same two haplotypes in the two lowland population, although those populations were located hundreds of kilometers apart. So this is an example of a convergence pattern of selection. And we found this at a locus that control macrohair initiation on the leaf blade. Macrohairs allow heat maintenance at high elevation. So what we think is here is that maybe some loss of function mutation were both selected in the two lowland populations. And so it is possible that this convergence actually occurred by migration between these two populations. And so more recently, there is a work that was headed by Silas Titus and Jeff Ross Ibarra. So they went sampling a number of maize and Theosanthe population in six locations here in Mexico. And they looked for selective sweeps. So Silas looks for selective sweeps. So he found a number of sweeps in maize, in Theosanthes. But what was interesting is that if you look among all the sweeps, what is the unique sweep proportion, you find, for instance, that in maize, the unique sweep proportion is below 50%. So actually, a lot of sweeps are shared among population, and this was also true for Theosanthes. So then we used a model that was developed, a method that was developed by Lee and Koop in 2017. And this model allowed you to understand what is the origin of this convergence. Is it that there's a standing variation in the ancestral population and eventually the same mutation were then selected in the two diverging populations? Or is it that there is a favorable mutation that occurred in one of the two populations after divergence and was brought by migration in the other population? Or is it that two independent mutations occurred in the two populations and were selected? And so what we found out is that in most cases, the most likely scenario was the actual migration scenario. So again, admixture was really important in this common sweep. But we also found in a lot of cases that the standing scenario was also very likely. And we found almost no instances where the independent scenario was favored. Adaptive introgression also contributed to the adaptation of maize. Adaptive introgression from the subspecies Mexicana also contributed to maize adaptation to the highlands. So I told you that maize was domesticated in the lowlands from the subspecies Parviglumis, and then it moved to the highlands of Mexico. And it seems that the Teosantes that was already there, Mexicana, contributed to the adaptation of maize to the highlands. So that was shown in this study, where you see the maize here is in yellow, Mexicana is in red, and you see that maize population have received a substantial amount of introgression from Mexicana. And if you actually look at the Mexicana ancestry proportion along elevation, you see that population growing at higher elevation has received a more gene flow from the Mexicana population, and the peaks of introgression are actually shared among population, which seems to indicate that it's truly adaptive introgression. Now, if we look within maize, how admixture within maize may have contributed to the adaptation of maize, this is an example of a study that we carried out where we basically sampled the number of maize inbred lines in the Americas and in Europe, and we performed a trimix analysis. We found that maize was introduced independently twice in Europe, following one route that gave rise to the emergence of the Italian and Spanish maize, and another route that gave rise to the more northern maize. Not only that, we found evidence of introgression. And what was interesting, so we found evidence of introgression at three groups. First, the corn belt dance here. Second, maize growing along the Pyrenees, and also the Italian maize. And so the corn belt dance admixture was already documented by historical documents. We know that the corn belt dance emerged from crosses between the northern flints in green here and the southern dunes. What was interesting is that this phenomenon was also found in the Pyrenees and the Italian material, as if adaptive innovation and spread at intermediate latitudes were driven by repeated admixture between northern and southern sources. And so, during maize expansion towards the northern latitude, we had a very strong selection for early flowering under long days, which allowed flowering time adjustments for maize, which is originally a tropical plant. And so when moving toward northern latitude, you had to have a major flowering time adjustment. So for instance, if you take maize growing in the northern US, it flowers much earlier than the maize flowering in the southern US, and you see that middle US is intermediate. So in our genomes that we sequenced, we looked at flowering time genes, those from the ZCN family, for instance, and we found, for instance, at this gene, ZCN5, that the material from the north had a very has a very distinct haplotypes than the tropical material. And the genetic groups located at the intermediate latitudes were basically a mix between these two haplotypes. So I hope I convinced you that, admixture among Teosante population contribute to their local adaptation. This is also true for admixture between maize varieties. And I showed you an example of Teosantes contributing to the local adaptation of maize. Now I want to show you an example where it's actually in the reverse direction. It's the gene flow from the crop to the wild that contributes to the adaptation of Teosantes. So this is a study that was initiated by the group of Valérie Lecor in Agroécologie Dijon. French Teosantes, so Teosantes in France, were actually first observed in the early 1990s. and they were observed later in Spain, and in both regions they caused important yield loss. And so the purpose of this study was to elucidate the origin of these European teosinte and identify the adaptive changes that have sustained habitat shifts from their tropical native region to Europe. So what we did is we collected seeds, teosinte seeds in France, and we genotyped them with a 50K SNP array, and we compiled this data with previously published data, including Spanish teosintes, Mexican teosintes from the two subspecies, Pardilumis and Mexicana, as well as a bunch of maize inbred lines and unraced. We found that the French and the Spanish teosintes are actually closer to the subspecies Mexicana, so the one that grows at high altitude in Mexico, and that is known to be a weed infesting maize field also in Mexico. So this is Pardilumis here in red. So then we performed some trimix analysis, and we were really interested to see that both the Spanish teosinte and the French teosinte received some gene flow from dense maize. We estimated this gene flow to 12% for the French teosinte and 42% for Spanish teosinte. Then we looked for adaptive footprints in European teosinte. We used this method called PC-ADAPT. So you see here the first axis allow to differentiate Mexicana, so the Mexican teosinte from the French and Spanish teosinte. And using these square loadings along this first axis, we were able to detect a number of outliers. And we found this huge cluster of outliers here located on the chromosome 8. Then we wanted to look at the correspondence between the outliers that we found and maize teosinte admixture patterns. So we took as two sources population, Mexicana and dense maize, and we looked at the pattern of local ancestry in European teosinte using ELAY. So the plot here shows the mean ancestry allele dosage from dense cultivated maize along the chromosomes, the 10 chromosomes, for the French teosinte in blue and the Spanish teosinte in green. So you see that there are a lot of gene flow, but what was really interesting to us is that this cluster of outliers on chromosome 8 actually corresponded to a peak of introgression where in this region you have two allele dosage from dense maize. So you're basically a dense maize in that region. And this region encompasses ZCN8, which is like really one of the major flowering time genes in maize. So clearly here, we had evidence that in a region controlling flowering time adjustments, you had introgression from dense maize in both Spanish and French teosinte. And this must have contributed to adjust the life cycle of French teosinte. And indeed, they are really well adjusted. So if you grow French teosinte in Dijon and Mexican teosinte from both Mexicana and Pardilumis, you have very different flowering time. So the Mexican teosinte, either they don't flower or they flower very late in the season at the time where maize is harvested, so they can't actually produce seeds for the next generation. But if you look at the French teosinte, they flower at the same time as maize. Similarly, we found a genomic region around a locust called ACC1 that was also in progress from maize. So a herbicide-tolerance maize variety is used in France, and this herbicide tolerance is caused by a mutation at the locus ACC1. We screened the French teosinte and found that 43% of them have now become resistant to this herbicide. And what we found is that the resistant teosinte, so here in blue, have actually two dense alleles. And so we sequenced the gene along its entire length in these resistant teosinte and found that it's the exact same haplotype that is found in the dense maize that are also resistant to this herbicide. So clearly, here is gene flow from maize to teosinte that have contributed to adapt these teosinte to the local climate and to the emergence of these teosinte as noxious weed in Europe. So So in general, I think the main message is that adaptive introgression is a powerful mechanism for adaptive innovations in crop and their wild relatives. And to finish, I want to give you some perspective on ongoing work. So we are now trying to explore the reverse side of the coin, that is the establishment of genetic barriers between Teosinte's population, maize varieties, but also between maize and Teosinte. For instance, here, when we sampled our two altitudinal gradients, so we sampled some Teosinte population, we sequenced them, and we performed here FST-based analysis. And what we found is that there are some regions like this one that corresponds to chromosomal inversions, so that block the recombination, and that possess a number of outliers that are potentially involved in altitudinal adaptation. And when we measured also a number of traits in common gardens for those Teosinte populations, so we evaluate 11 populations for 18 traits in two common gardens for 2 years, and we then associate the variation at our candidate SNPs, so potentially involved in altitudinal adaptation, to variation of traits such as flowering time, grain weight, number of seeds per year. We found a number of significant associations, and we actually found that among outlier SNPs detected with PubGen methods that associate with phenotypic variation at adaptive traits, more than expected were located in these chromosomal inversions. So we think that by capturing multiple locally favored alleles, inversions have contributed to the evolution of an altitudinal syndrome in Teosinte. We are also now having contributing to a project to look for a limitation of gene flow between wild and domesticates. So the whole idea comes from this paper, which is a meta-analysis on 32 species. So this meta-analysis reports crosses between wild relative and crops, and it shows that in 30% of the cases, you actually have reduced fitness in F1 hybrids. So what we are interested in now is to consider reproductive isolation as a domestication trait that limits gene flow between wild and domesticates, and hence contributing to the preservation of the domestication syndrome. And we want to use the domestication as a model to understand the very first barriers to reproduction between those sympatric forms that often that evolves under strong selection. So we are doing so in 14 different plant species in the framework of the Domisol project, with a number of collaborators here from different labs. And with that, I would like to thank you for your attention, and to thank my my group here in Plateau-de-Saclay, the students, and also a number of collaborators in France and abroad. So thank you for